David Sanderin coming in as Loeb. Milodyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flame.
Eckers, put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, happy Wednesday. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media as we kick things off on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. We are underway on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. You know, there's been a lot of negative talk around the Flames over the last little while. They've lost 6 of their last 7, coming off a pretty ugly 5-3 loss to Anaheim on Tuesday night. But perhaps a ray of sunshine. And this gentleman is always smiling and always upbeat. Had a good little celly after scoring a 2-1 goal on Tuesday night. Andre Kuzmenko was a very nice goal.
I mean, the defending was a little suspect on the Ducks side of things.
Goaltending may have overcommitted just a wee bit.
Just a tad.
But that's what happens when you got a guy as skilled and patient as the guy we're talking about. Andre Kuzmenko has 4 goals and 6 points in his last 3 games. That's something positive. And I guess my question is, what are we seeing here? And I know we talked about this a little bit earlier this week on a Daily Flames roundtable, but could this be Kuzmenko figuring it out as a member of the Flames? Could this be him playing much better now because a lingering illness might be behind him, or maybe he's feeling better with a nagging injury that we all believe he's kind of been dealing with here for the last number of weeks? Is this a little bit more or a little bit closer to the Kuzmenko the Flames were thinking about when they brought him in as part of the Lindholm trade, or the Kuzmenko that the Flames are hoping they're going to get going into next season? I don't know the answer to that question, but I do think what we've seen from him the last 3 games, by far his best 3-game stretch as a member of the Flames, the very least makes it valid to open up that conversation a little bit.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And one of the challenges, I suppose, with a player like Andre Kuzmenko, whether you paid close attention to the Vancouver Canucks and watched with your own eyes that his play would kind of go up and down, or whether you just know that he arrived in Calgary with a reputation as a guy who can run hot and cold. If you'd heard that Rick Tocchet wasn't too sure all the time about his level of dig in or his, you know, engagement, his whether he really wanted to be a difference maker at both ends of the ice or just score goals. You know, if you've heard that about Andre Kuzmenko, then I suppose the challenging part for Andre is when you go and rip off 6 points in 3 games, and that's 4 goals and 2 highlight reel assists, people are still going to say, yeah, well, we all know how inconsistent he could be. And I think that's why this is such a fascinating topic for me, and I wrote about this today as well for the Post Media sites, is, you know, could this be a sneak preview of what Andre Kuzmenko might be able to bring on a little bit more regular basis for the Calgary Flames? Like, we know that we're not talking about a guy who's going to average 4 goals every 3 games next season, but if you crunch the numbers on Kuzmenko, couple that stick out for me. One, he's tied for the team lead in goals since he arrived in that trade. And when you're talking about a guy who missed multiple games due to injury or due to illness
yeah,
and has been dealing with at least one nagging injury, that's pretty impressive in its own right. And so you start there. And then also, if you look at a guy who has 9 goals in 21 games with the Flames, well, that would put him on pace for 35 over an 82-game season. And if you can get a guy who can score at a 30-something goal clip for you, a guy who is supposed to be merely a salary dump, then you've kind of got found money there, right? And I think that's what why when you look at Andre Kuzmenko and wonder if this is a sign of him turning the corner, maybe rediscovering some of that confidence, I think that's what makes him so fascinating. This team relies on a scoring by committee approach. And if he can be a key part of that committee, it's going to make a big difference.
Yeah. And, you know, I also think, and this is not trying to take anything away from Kuzmenko at all, but I also don't think it's a coincidence that the three best games that Andre's played have been on a line with Nazem Kadri.
We had this conversation in the hot stove earlier, yeah. Right? Me, you, and Wilsey, that this is just another indication of how important Nazem Kadri has been. Like, this is just, you know,
and
how
a line mate he hasn't elevated.
Well,
this
that's
year,
the
right?
thing, right? We talk about Michael Backlund in that light, and we have for years. Well, you know, the Backlund bump, you get put with Michael and you're going to play a little bit better. Well, if you're looking for a bump, Nazem Kadri has been the line mate you need this year.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been great, but I do give Andre Kuzmenko a lot of credit. And then I found him to be very interesting when he spoke with us on Wednesday morning after practice. Kuzmenko came out and look, we all understand that there is always going to be a little lost in translation because obviously English is not Andre's first language, but I think you'll understand the point he's trying to get across when he was talking about his season, talking about what he's done of late. I'll play this for you, and you can tell that Kuzmenko's feeling better about the way he's playing, but also understands that he needed to start playing a whole lot better. This is just a little bit of Andre Kuzmenko's chat with us from earlier on Wednesday.
I believe in my power. I believe myself. As every game is better, is very important moment for me. Because it's this season, I lose this moment. I lose this very important moment for me. Is believe my power is very terrible my season. This I understand. I need to play better. But is this season? After this season, I have a lot of discussion about what has happened at the start season. Because I like it. I like it this moment. I like it. This is my terrible season, you know. That was a different say, but I like it as a bad start. Because after bad starts, I understand what I need for play better, for go to other level. It's a good season for me on the step up. Yes. And
so, again, a little lost in translation, and I give anybody a ton of credit for coming out and answering questions in their second language and so on and so forth. Lord knows I could not do that confidently. But I think the point he's making is, and I'm curious if this is what you picked up on, he knows it's been a bad season by his standards. He knows he hasn't been to the level that he expects of himself. As he said, the words he used, I believe in my power. He believes in the capability, the type of player he is. And he feels like he's really worked on some things and has really taken a step forward in his game. That's kind of what I got from that clip, is that, hey, Kuzmenko knows that he was not good enough in Vancouver and wasn't good enough early on with the Flames, and feels like he's really worked to try to rectify that.
Yeah, I sense some sort of pride in that comment as well, in terms of the way he's managed to kind of right the ship after a bad start to the season in Vancouver. And while Andre Kuzmenko is not the most proficient English speaker, and
neither are we.
Yeah, and good on him. I don't mean that as a shot at all. Good on him for the effort he puts in, because he really does. But, you know, the one thing that I know Andre Kuzmenko is aware of is the sort of reputation that followed him here from Vancouver. The idea that this is a guy who couldn't check his coat, as I like to say. You know, he talked today as well about the importance of being a good defensive player and not being a guy who was a liability to his team when he's on the ice. And I think a lot of that comes from he knows obviously why he wasn't playing as much in Vancouver. He's a proud competitor, and yet this was a piece that the Canucks deemed to be expendable. And while I'm probably connecting some dots because Andre hasn't said that himself to us in the media, I really do believe that this is a player who's sort of determined to show that he's more than just a one-trick offensive pony. And while these are the times we're going to talk about him, right? He scored a great goal last night. He's on a three-game point streak. Had two terrific assists against the Los Angeles Kings. Should have had a hat trick. Like that, these are the times we're going to talk about it, Andre Kuzmenko. And yet, when I mentioned his reputation today to Ryan Huska as a guy who wasn't always as engaged as he needed to be, Ryan Huska sort of corrected me and said, I don't think engagement is the problem. I think this is a guy who loves the game and loves to be on the ice. And if anything, he can maybe overthink it sometimes. And so while I'm still not sure where Andre Kuzmenko fits long term, while I'm still not sure exactly what he is, to be honest, I think he deserves full marks, especially since he returned for the illness, for what he's provided the Flames. And I really do think, like, this was a guy who was mostly in the deal because of his salary. You wanted the first round pick. You wanted Hunter Brustevich. And suddenly the guy who was supposed to be the salary dump is looking like a really important piece as well. And I think that's a really good thing for the Flames, whether you keep him or trade him for another asset or whatever the future looks like.
Well, and that's the point. Like, there's no downside here to him playing better. Because if all of a sudden you find something, maybe Kadri and Kuzmenko just find this ridiculous groove with one another, you're like, damn, like, this is really working. We don't want to break this up. Well, awesome. That's something that you found that you weren't expecting. Or maybe it works and you're like, damn, we got teams offering us a decent return for him going into next year's trade deadline. Nothing wrong with that for a guy on an expiring contract. Maybe he plays really well down the stretch here and you get some teams that are really interested in him during the offseason and willing to give up an asset to bring Kuzmenko in. Whatever the case, any of this is better than him being the kind of roller coaster and honestly, for a good few weeks there, the really ineffective guy that you didn't know what to do with. You're like, do we keep him on the Sharangovich line? We maybe want other guys there, but we can't put Kuzmenko on the fourth line. That experiment didn't really work at
right.
all. Like, this is such a better situation for the Flames than any of those things.
Yeah.
So definitely good news for the Flames.
The only downside, and I air quotes downside because I don't actually believe it's necessarily a downside, but the only downside is if Andre Kuzmenko is in a top six or top nine right wing slot, it gets a little harder to fit Matt Coronato in sometimes. And yet I think as long as Andre Kuzmenko is playing the type of hockey he is right now, it's a good thing that there's the competition for the young guys, whether it's Pospisil, he's playing on the opposite wing from Kuzmenko right now.
Yeah.
But whatever young guys are in the mix for top nine spots, that competition is a good thing. I said this a couple weeks ago, and it's easy to say when Andre Kuzmenko's not playing well, which he wasn't necessarily at that point, you just don't want him in a top nine spot because he's got top nine talent. He has to earn it too, and we've seen that of late.
Yep. See how it plays out? This text from Mike says, Kuzmenko has some dynamic attributes, but the hot and cold quote is pretty bang on. He's completely invisible if he's not producing, but the patience and stick skills he showed on that one goal against Anaheim isn't something a lot of other Flames players can do. And so, yeah, hot and cold for sure. See if more hot can be garnered from him as they go into next season. Dylan writes, question for you guys. When Kuzmenko was acquired, were you actually excited at what he could become, or was he just a salary dump for you? I remember doing that show on Jan 31 when the Flames made the Lindholm trade. I remember being in Vancouver and doing that show on a set of AirPods. And I just remember talking about, you know, as much as like the guy that intrigues me the most is Brustevich, no doubt about it. I am so fascinated by this player going forward. But I was like, man, Kuzmenko scored 39 as a first-year NHLer at the age of 26 and 27. Like, is there a way the Flames could get anything close to that? And I would suggest he was the second most interesting piece of the deal for me, because I also, you know, I talked to Sat and I talked to Joey and some other Canucks folks all the time. And like the book on Kuzmenko is, yeah, have fun with the offense, but also have fun with the other side of it. And so I just was so intrigued about how he was going to fit with this group and the way they play. And, you know, Rick Tocchet's non-negotiables aren't all that different than Ryan Huska's non-negotiables. And how's it going to work and all that type of stuff? I was super intrigued by it and see how it's going to work. And I still am, to be, I still don't know. It's only been three games where it's looked like this. But at the very least, you've seen a glimpse of what it could be on the positive side of things, right? And if you can get more of the positive and you can get like a 65-35 ratio of the positive to negative, I think Kuzmenko can help a team that, let's be frank, they might have some offensive challenges going into next season.
Yeah, and to answer Dylan's question, that my reaction was sort of similar to yours. I did and do, quite frankly, still view him as a salary dump, but what I wrote that night and what I'll continue to stand by is that, to me, like when your salary dump is a guy who scored 39 goals the year before, you're getting an intriguing and a valuable piece. Like, I understand why Kuzmenko had to be in that deal. This wasn't, at least from my guesstimation, this wasn't Craig Conroy saying, we got to have Kuzmenko or we're not doing this deal. This, we know why he was included. It was because the Canucks needed to balance salaries. But, you know, when you hear the term salary dump, you're often thinking of a guy who's playing on a third pairing or who's playing on the fourth line or who isn't bringing a whole, maybe he's even on LTIR, he's not bringing a whole lot of value, right? Ryan Johansson, that is the sort of guy I look at as a pure salary dump. Yeah. Like, the Philadelphia Flyers kind of put their fingers over their nose and say, yeah, sure, we'll take Ryan Johansson as long as there's a first rounder in that deal. Well, that wasn't the case here with Kuzmenko. So yes, I viewed him as a salary dump, but my kind of initial reaction was, hey, if that's what you got for your salary dump, if you got a guy who can score at a 30-something goal clip in this league, that's not a traditional salary dump, you know, okay, fine, we'll take this and just throw it somewhere, right?
Agreed. This text says, for me with Kuzi, I don't need him to play backs or Coleman-level defense, just need him to not be a liability. And I think that's fair, and yeah. I think that's what the Flames are kind of trying to get him to.
And listen, if your expectation is anything other than just try not to be a liability, Andrei Kuzmenko's not going to be able to meet it. We're not going to be discussing Andrei Kuzmenko, the Selke candidate, at any point. If he can get to be...
But remember, we did say that, and I'm not trying to compare the players, but I remember saying that many times about Johnny, and I still don't think Johnny is very good defensively.
Right.
But they found a way to minimize that in 21-22, right?
Yeah, and I know you're not trying to compare the players, but it becomes...
I know. Now
it,
I have
compared. It becomes... really apples and oranges. I just think if Andrei Kuzmenko could become an average defensive forward, he would have made a huge stride.
For sure.
And I think that's probably where your comment about a guy like Johnny is fair. Even, you know, early in his career, and I'm cautioning against comparing Kuzmenko to a player who's really young, but there was a knock on Sean Monahan for a long time too, right? Like, this is a guy who's hurting you defensively, and certainly no one says that about him anymore. But with Kuzmenko, a winger who, you know, you just kind of need to do the rudimentary job along the wall, make sure you get that puck out, make sure you're back-checking and back-tracking hard. Like, just be an average, just be a mediocre defensive player, and your ability to help the power play, your knack for finding the back of the net, that part will keep you in the lineup.
Yep. I guess what I would say now is that I am regardless of what Brstevich is as a member of the Flames, regardless of what Yoni Yermo turns into, or even what they do in the first with that first round pick they got from Vancouver, I honestly think that it's hard to dispute the fact that from a just straight up asset maximization standpoint, the job that Craig Conroy did on that Elias Lindholm trade was borderline masterclass. And he was having a down season. And look, what'll turn it from a home run that just, as I said this a few times, what'll turn it from a home run like a, you know, the Mark McGwire record setter that just barely cleared the wall, as opposed to Barry Bonds' 520-foot moonshot. What'll differentiate that is what happens with Brstevich and what happens with that first-round pick, so on and so forth. But just the ability to maximize an asset like they did with Lindholm and to kind of play the Rangers off the Canucks and get Patrick Alvin to where he did, to give up all he gave up to bring in the player. Canucks fans can tell you all you want that like these assets didn't matter to us. That might be true. But the Flames still got five assets in the Lindholm trade, including a guy who, when he's on, can be a really dynamic offensive player.
Yeah, and the only part I'm going to disagree with you on is it does matter what Brstevich becomes. It does
matter.
And again,
I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm just saying from like the maximization of the asset in terms of what they got for him.
In terms of judging a trade 2 months later, and you're at a point now where, especially with Elias Lindholm struggling to make an impact in Vancouver, you know, the sort of worst case scenario is nobody pans out. And it kind of goes down as an irrelevant trade. And based on what I've heard about Hunter Brstevich, based on the confidence that I have, a lot of it bolstered by what we've seen of late in some of the players they've found, the confidence that I have in the Flames scouting staff with Craig Conroy doing a bunch of that legwork as well to take advantage of that first round pick. Like, I expect us to be sitting here in 5 years looking back and saying, man, that was a great deal. I just think so much of it will ultimately be judged by what those guys turned into. We're just not, like, I don't think there's a risk of a loss here. I don't think we're going
to. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make, is that he's, by what he did and all that he got, like, they did a pretty good job on it, and you can already say that.
Yeah.
And then we can determine to what extent from
and
here
if
on
you're,
out.
If you're making a trade for futures primarily, and we're already saying, geez, this looks pretty good, you've done a darn good job.
With Wes Gilbertson, my name is Pat Steinberg. We're coming at you this hour on Flames Talk from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Do you have cracks in your walls, floors, or ceilings? Visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate. They are all things basement-y.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, time to go inside hockey on this Wednesday for Calgary Co-op. This hockey season, support local. Find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer today. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. It's a Wednesday, which means we say hello to our Pacific Division insider. Jonathan Davis joins us now from NHL Network and NHL Network Radio. Hello, JD. How are we doing?
Things are great. Yeah, sure.
Good.
Absolutely.
That's what I like to hear. Are they, things are better than they are for the LA Kings with you, because things are not so good for the LA Kings right now.
No, I mean, look, it's a real struggle, and they're doing their best, you know, to keep the St. Louis Blues, you know, relevant right now for a playoff spot. But I mean, look, it would, if they were to collapse, this may be one of the worst collapses in sports history. Just the fact, Pat, I mean, they've got what, 8 games left. They don't have to leave the state of California. They've only got one playoff team on their schedule. That's Vancouver. I mean, you know, look, there's no reason why, you know, they should find themselves at worst in wildcard spot number 2 at the end of the day.
So the schedule is interesting. They come home after losing 3 of their last 4. I'm really curious, and you know, maybe this leads us into the talk about Philippe Deneau and how close he may or may not be to returning, and the continued frustration surrounding Pierre-Luc Dubois. But what does your gut say? Like, how in danger are the Kings, in your eyes, of actually giving up this spot to St. Louis?
I don't think that, look, I don't think that they're in any danger. I think that, you know, this is really just a matter of, you know, what happens? Is there, you know, can they flip any type of switch come game 83? And there's just, you know, like I had said before the road trip started, I really wasn't going to take too much into it because I really didn't, you know, I felt like, look, they're in the playoffs. But it's the way that they lost games. I mean, you know, that game in Calgary, they had five shots in the first 37 minutes. That's unacceptable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have leads of 2-1 and 3-2 in Winnipeg, and that just doesn't make sense. You know, that's you can't blow those games. And, you know, for me, the other thing in Calgary, I think, you know, there's another issue in Los Angeles, I believe, and that's the fact that Jim Hiller, in my opinion, is coaching to keep his job for next year, and it's about wins, and that's the bottom line for him. He is trying to get wins. And I understand that's the job of any coach. But I bring it up because, Pat, in that game against Calgary, look, the score is 3-2. Kevin Fiala takes a terrible penalty in the offensive zone. It leads to Calgary's power play goal to make it 4-2.
Mm-hmm.
The guy should have been sat the rest of the night. Like, you got to send a message right there. That's where, you know, you've got to make guys accountable. And there is no accountability. And I understand the dilemma that Hiller has, but to me, you know, that's a missed opportunity to send any message. And what does that do for the rest of the bench? Like, because he goes right out of the power play that came up, you know, shortly after he got out of the box.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to go back to your original question, in danger of missing the playoffs, I don't think so. I mean, St. Louis has got Nashville tomorrow night. They've got three softies after that, but they still have Carolina and Dallas on their schedule. It's tough. It's going to be tough. But at the end of the day, LA truly controls their destiny. And, you know, with seven teams that they're going to face who are out of the playoffs, and two of those, you know, it's two against Anaheim. It's one against, you know, Chicago to close out the year. It's San Jose. I mean, they're not missing the playoffs.
Okay.
It's Seattle tonight. I mean, like, they shouldn't. They shouldn't. But someone reminded me, a Kings fan reminded me, they went through a stretch 1 year, I can't remember how far back it was, where they lost their last 11 games when they were destined to make the playoffs. And he's like, please, I don't want to see this again.
Okay. How close is Philippe Deneau?
As Jim Hiller said today after the morning skate, when he was asked about Deneau playing, we'll see. He, you know... It kind of reminded me of, you know, typical Daryl Sutter, you know, come to warmups and you'll find out if the guy, you know, who's starting and who's playing.
Okay.
So, you know, it's interesting to me, you know, so Deneau is out. This is a chance, you mentioned it, you know, off the top. This is a chance for Pierre-Luc Dubois to step up, and he hasn't. No, you know, why start now? But I'll tell you, the other thing, Pat, that I thought in the Calgary game, I thought the Calgary game especially would have been an opportunity to play Quinton Byfield at center and make him, you know, make him one of your top three centers. Why not? Like, you're making the playoffs. This was a good opportunity. But I think, again, this goes back to coaching strictly for wins than, you know, maybe trying to experiment a little. And,
right.
And I understand the dilemma, but you know, this team, what the idea was when they brought in Dubois, it was that they were going to be strong down the middle with Dubois, Deneau, and Kopitar. Well, we've seen what Dubois has done. You know, Byfield's supposed to be a center, and he will be in a couple of years. But, hey, why not try it out now? Like, I don't know. Hmm. And I'll tell you, the other thing, as a fan, not just as a hockey fan, I thought what they did to Akil Thomas – in their game against Winnipeg was reprehensible, in my opinion. They brought this guy up. He played 3:41. Like, why? Why are you bringing him up if you're going to play the guy for 3 minutes and 40 seconds? Like, it makes no sense to me. It's so confusing what goes on, what's going on with that organization right now. It's very, it's, look, I'm not – I'm a fan of players. I'm not a fan of teams. Like I'm right here in this city. I see what's going on. You're closer to it. It makes you shake your head.
Huh. Well, and we'll see if the Kings can do what they need to make it in. They've got Seattle on Wednesday night as they're back on home ice. Jonathan Davis of NHL Network with us, our Pacific Division insider. Hey, as you texted me at some point last week after our last hit, the Oilers in first place in the Pacific. You've been saying this for weeks, and it remains the case.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're 5 points back. They've got two games in hand. Now, look, their schedule is not easy. They have two back-to-backs. They've got Colorado twice, including the last game of the year. They've got Dallas tonight. They've got Vegas on their schedule. So it's by no means easy. But they do have one game against Vancouver. And so they're not out of it. Now, it's interesting because I was seeing Mark Spector's tweet earlier today, and he referenced the fact that, you know, Pickard's starting tonight against Dallas, which I thought was a bit of a surprise. But the idea that they're going to pretty much split the goaltending group down the stretch. So right now, it's more about we don't care necessarily where we finish, though I would think that, man, like, why wouldn't you, if you've got a shot at finishing first, like, why wouldn't you want to play one of the wild card teams as opposed to Vegas in the first round?
Right. Which is what it looks like who you're going to play if you do end up being number two in the Pacific Division. They have, you mentioned they're in Dallas. They have had some success there, hey?
Yeah, I mean, they've won 4-6 in Dallas, and Pickard did beat them in their one win this year. Oh, this guy got 71 goals, or sorry, 71, 63 goals. Who is that guy again? Where's 34 for Toronto?
Oh, Austin Matthews, yes.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I maybe that's part of the thinking behind it. I mean, I didn't think that Skinner played poorly against St. Louis. It is interesting, and we'll see how it goes the rest of the way. But look, they have a legit shot at still finishing first in this division. We'll see where it goes. It should be a fun one tonight. These are always high scoring games between the two. We usually see, you know, we've seen seven goals. I think it's in six of the last seven meetings between the two. That's only, you know, so it'll be fun. Now, what's interesting is that Connor has only got one assist in the two games between these two teams. They've done a good job at shutting him down, have the Dallas Stars. And they should get Chris Tanev, is my understanding. He will play tonight after getting involved in that hard hit with Adam Larson on Saturday,
which I was really worried about when I saw. I'm glad that he's actually good to go. I was like, poor Chris, and we know he's had some shoulder issues and all that type of stuff. So I was really concerned when I saw that. So I'm happy to see that Chris Tanev is good to go and ready to play for this game on Wednesday night. JD, Vegas. You know, there was a stretch there where you're like, oh boy, Golden Knights are falling back down to earth. You know, I know teams like Minnesota and Calgary and Seattle, when they still had playoff life, are like, oh, maybe it's Vegas that's the team to catch. And then they rattle off 9-2-1 over 12.
You know, Pat, it goes back to that whole thing, my goalie's better than yours, I win. And that's what it's been. And credit Logan Thompson, who has been, you know, who has been taking advantage of the opportunity that he's been waiting for quite some time, you know, for most of this season. He's wanted to be the number one guy. And with the Adin Hill injury, you know, he's had the opportunity to play, what, I think it's five straight starts for him after Patera got the one game when they had a back-to-back situation. Mm-hmm. So he's been excellent. He has been really, really good for them. And, you know, and that's been part of the difference in their turnaround. And look, their big players continue to step up. And I thought what was encouraging for them last night was they built up that 4-1 lead, but then any time that Vancouver came back, what, they got to 4-2, 20 seconds later, 5-2. Vancouver makes it 5-3, 27 seconds later, it's 6-3. They stepped on Vancouver. They didn't let them, you know, they never really let them breathe. And that's a good, you know, for the Golden Knights and their fans. I mean, that's a very good sign. And then, you know, Thomas Hertl was practicing today in a contact jersey. There's the, you know, he could play Friday when they play Arizona. You know, this is what Vegas and their fans have been waiting for. But yeah, no, they look really good. And yeah, how quickly the narrative can change, as you mentioned, you know, that there was concern that, oh my God, Minnesota's sniffing, you know, a wild card spot. And now Vegas has not only moved out of the wild card spot,
yep,
but they've moved,
yep,
into third. And I, Pat, I really hope that Edmonton finds a way to finish in first, because it's just not right that Vegas and Edmonton, one of those teams will be knocked out in the first round.
I mean,
it's just,
speak for yourself.
It's not
JD.
Good for the league.
Speak for yourself.
I know. I'm speaking for me and anybody outside of Calgary.
Probably true. Although maybe Vancouver as well. They'd probably not. They'd probably rather face a wild card team than the Vegas Golden Knights.
I'm sure
as
they
well.
Would.
Yeah. Let's move to Vancouver. By the way, it's Jonathan Davis of NHL Network and NHL Network Radio. You mentioned they kind of get taken to school at T-Mobile on Tuesday night, and Rick Tocchet, the head coach in Vancouver, had some more interesting comments post game, didn't he?
He did. I mean, you know, he took the softer version of Torts. You know, he called his team light. I mean, he just said, look, you know, guys need to step up at this time of the year. You just can't turn, you know, the switch on and off. And it wasn't animated by any stretch, but he definitely made the point. I mean, this is a team that, you know, the Canucks, that they just don't have any quality wins of late. They've only got quality losses. I mean, they've lost to LA, Dallas, Vegas, Colorado, Washington. You know, they, since Demko went down, you know, the only win of any quality was really the game that, you know, that Spencer Knight came in for Demko, and that was the Winnipeg game. But other than that, I mean, the other wins are against teams that are out of the playoffs. And so, yeah, there's a concern. And so, while I was praising Vegas for stepping on the Canucks' throats, by the same token, you know, Rick Tocchet's going, man, we score, we get ourselves back in, but then 20 seconds later, twice, we're giving up a goal. That can't happen. And so, yeah, there's definitely concern in Vancouver. Now, Demko's supposed to be back, what, maybe next week? We'll see where this goes.
Let's wrap up just a little further south in Seattle. Kraken aren't going to the playoffs. We know that. They have recalled Shane Wright, though, the fourth overall selection from a few years ago. It has not been a great introduction to pro hockey and NHL hockey specifically for Shane Wright, but does get a goal in his return.
Yeah, and so a nice story. I mean, look, this is, they brought him up at the right time. You know, it's San Jose. You've got LA tonight. Okay, maybe, you know, a slightly, you know, a tougher opponent. And then it's Anaheim, you know, the next game. And, you know, and you're doing it on the road. So it takes the pressure off him playing in front of the home folks to get started again. So, I like it. And, you know, he got to play with, you know, he was playing, I think, with Jaden Schwartz and Matty Beniers, I think, in that game a couple of nights ago. But, hey, look, something that he needed. And, you know, look, he'll go back down and he'll play for Coachella Valley in the playoffs. He's had a good season. He's got, I think it's 20 goals and 63 points for Wright, that, you know, in the AHL. But good for him that, you know, he got off to that start in his first game back, and we'll see what happens, you know, tonight here in Los Angeles.
Have a wonderful rest of your week, JD. We'll talk some more Pacific Division hockey next week, hey?
Always, as always. You too. Have a great week, Pat.
Thanks, JD. Jonathan Davis is our Pacific Division insider. He joins us Wednesdays, and he joined us Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local, Calgary. From best from the West, Canadian produce to quality-only Alberta meats. Find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in-store today as we start to wrap up this hour of Flames Talk. Wes Gilbertson on Twitter, at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Connor, Cam, Simon, making things happen behind the scenes, as well. We're available, as you know, wherever you get your podcasts. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.